All right, we're continuing our journey, learning to listen to the voice of God in the Scriptures in Luke 18, starting with verse 1. And today is about the journey, meaning I don't expect to get very far, but it's about the journey and learning some things along the way. So Luke 18, starting with verse 1, going through verse 8. In my Bible, there's a little subtitle for this, the parable of the persistent widow. I'm going to read out of the New International Version, although I may rephrase a few things to be a little more literal. It says, "Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up," or literally, lose heart. "He said, in a certain town there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared about or respected men. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, 'Grant me justice against my adversary.' For some time he refused. But finally he said to himself, 'Even though I don't fear God or respect men, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice, so that she won't eventually wear me out with her coming.' And the Lord said, 'Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones, who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice, and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" We have gotten some glimpses of this parable as we've been going along because of this phrase, "When the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" kind of keeps popping up. We're going to go back just to the very first verse of the parable. Actually, before the parable, the first verse of the chapter. "Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up." And you know what? I just realized I made a bunch of copies of that handout, Joy, and I left them here, and I don't remember where I left them. I know I've seen them. I don't know if they're still by the copy machine or if I set them in my office. Would you take a peek, if that's all right? Joy got a copy of it, so she knows what it looks like. I have... Joy, check the office first. I may have put them in the...
In the drawer?
No, just on the desk someplace, I think. I just had made some copies of a handout that I've used before when teaching people about studying the Bible through asking yourselves questions. And you may wish to have a copy of it. I got the copies made after church last time, and not before. So Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up or lose heart. We've been asking at the outset simple questions. We call them fact questions. Thank you. Just trying, anybody who wants one, send them around. Yeah. Just trying to hear what it says in the verse. And so if you've been here with us, you've heard some examples. If you wanted an example in front of you on paper, Joy will send some of those around. But take just a moment and look at this verse. What are some questions that we could ask just to hear what this verse is actually saying? Anybody have a question just to help us hear what it says, Ken?
What is the purpose of the parable?
Excellent, right? Because this verse actually tells us the purpose of the parable that Jesus is telling. So who can answer that question for me? Not all at once. That's right. To encourage his disciples that they should always pray and not give up or not lose heart. That's probably the, you know, sort of the biggest, most important fact in the verse, right? Any other smaller things that we might care to notice? Just for the sake of example. Right? Who's he talking to? His disciples. And you could even ask, who's talking? Right? Jesus is speaking. So Jesus, speaking to his disciples, what kind of a saying is he sharing? A parable, right? All of those small details may not be terribly essential if we've been following along what's happening in the story, but just that's examples of fact questions, making sure we're hearing the language of the verse. Jesus told them a parable for the purpose of encouraging them to always pray and not give up. Okay, when you're interpreting, it's always easiest if you get curious about something. So having heard those facts, what are you curious about? How to pray? Okay. Anything else you're curious about?
Why did you feel the need?
Very interesting. Right? When we're told specifically there's this purpose, he had this purpose of telling them this parable, that's a very interesting question. Why would he feel the need to tell them, always pray and don't give up? Excellent. Anything else you're curious about?
The conviction not to give up.
I'm sorry, you're answering the question.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you get the conviction not to give up?
Oh, okay. All right. This is almost getting to the application side of things. Did you catch that? Jane was saying, well, how do I make sure that I don't give up? All right? And that's excellent. All right? We've seen the progression. Just a simple thing. By hearing Jesus told them this parable specifically so they wouldn't give up, and we said, well, why would he be interested in telling that? And then Jane took us all the way around to, well, if it's so important, how do I make sure that I am not among those who give up? Right? That's the natural flow when you begin to hear what's actually happening in the passage. Let's take this step back then to Ken's question. And really, this is an excellent way to ask an interpretation question. Say it again.
Why did he feel the need to do it?
All right. Then, why did Jesus feel the need to express to his disciples the importance of always praying and not giving up at that point in time?
Well, he had just got through talking about his kingdom.
Yes.
Some being ready and some not ready, and some being taken and not taken. Mm-hmm. So perhaps this was piggyback to some went, some didn't go. Therefore, you need to keep praying.
Interesting. All right. And haven't we seen that all through this? Because you know, when we ask ourselves what makes the difference between those who went and those who were left, those who were taken and those who were left, we realize that the difference took place long before that instant when some were taken and others were left. Is that not correct?
Yeah, the greed in their heart that sent them back to the house.
Yeah.
Overnight then.
Right. That where I end up in the moment, the day of the Lord's coming, really is the end of a long path before that. And so it makes sense that Jesus, having just spoken about the final end of people's decisions, would now step back and say, so now is the time for you to take heart and not lose heart. And if you happen to lose heart along the way, he's just got done telling them what the significance of that would be for their lives. So this is very relevant in this context. Anything else that you noticed in the context? Why would Jesus be wanting to tell them to always pray and not give up in this context? Did you have more, Susan?
Well, I'm just thinking, why was he telling the disciples? Who was he meaning to pray? Was it just them or them because they knew and he discipled to everyone else? Was it for the just the disciples or everyone on the earth at that time or to future times?
Okay.
It doesn't really fit.
This is kind of a side question, though. Why would he be telling his disciples this? Obviously, I mean, one answer is the disciples were open to it. They were already praying. He could say, keep on praying. For other people, perhaps were not. You know, I mean, you don't tell the pagans always keep on praying and don't give up. But was there any more to that that you were curious about?
No.
Okay. As we look down through history, you know, we could say, to whom else does this apply? Right? Because that's an application question. But if he told it to his disciples then we who count ourselves his disciples now would also sit up and pay attention. Norm?
Well, I wonder if he wasn't just also trying to help them prepare for his death.
Wow. What made you think that in this context?
Well, you know, where it is in relationship to his ministry, it's not that far.
Okay.
Ministry, and it, you know, he also is knowing that they're going to scatter. He's telling
them. Yeah, yeah.
And so trying to help them to realize that their strength is in that prayer.
Right, that they are going to be experiencing a serious shock soon. And will they be tempted to lose heart?
Yes.
I think of the passage, it's in Luke, later, the road to Emmaus, the two disciples that Jesus is talking with, and he, you know, he's like, what are you so upset about? And they say, haven't you heard about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in word and deed? We had hoped that he would be the one to redeem Israel. Talk about lose heart. Give up hope. They were shaken to the core. Everything that they had thought would be just in a few days, just a little while, was gone. Anything else? Anyone notice anything else right here in this context, in the sections we've just looked at? Norm is correct in the larger context. The cross is coming soon. But even in this section that we've just looked at, is there anything that indicates Jesus has this on his mind?
Well, if this second coming is coming, and one is going to be taken and one is going to be left, then they need to pray.
Yes, yeah. But Norma's pointing out that he thinks Jesus probably even has the cross on his mind, and the disappointment that the disciples will be facing with that. And I was just asking, what is there in the immediate context here, besides the broader picture that is coming soon, that would give us a clue Jesus actually has this specifically on his mind? Yeah, although that's looking down at the second coming. Anyone notice? We began this section back in about 1720. Between there and here, anything that would indicate to us Jesus has the cross on his mind?
31 is talking about the others on the housetop, not to come down.
Yeah.
He's talking here about the destruction of Jerusalem, but the cross comes first.
Okay, how do we know the cross comes first? I mean, you and I know historically, but are you making a biblical statement?
No.
Here? All right. Ken? Yeah, where there's a dead body, the vulture. Some people have wondered whether that's a reference to the cross, but the indication seems to be there that he's commenting about the final end of things. No, nobody notices anything?
Well, it talks about him looking for the Son of Man.
Yeah.
Not being there.
What verse are you in? 22? The time is coming when you long for one of the days of the Son of Man?
Yeah, 23 also. 25 talks about him suffering things.
What's that referring to?
Pretty much the cross.
Yeah. I mean, here he is right here saying, you all want justice. You all want things to be made right. In fact, you're going to long for that day. And you won't get it. Because, why? First, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by this generation. Your hopes are going to be horribly disappointed.
If they'd understood, it would have been a bit different.
Mm. Wow. So, we understand a little bit of why Jesus would be so interested in telling them at this time, not only in the broader context of his ministry, as Norm pointed out, but even in the context of what he's saying right here. I'm going to suffer and be rejected and die, and none of the things that you have imagined happening are going to happen. the way you thought they were going to happen? What is the significance of losing heart? What does that mean? And there's kind of two parts to that question. One is sort of what does it look like? And the other is what's the final result? And in this sense, what does giving up mean? I mean, are you going to crawl under a rock and die? What does it mean to lose heart in this sense that Jesus is talking about here? Wow. If nothing else, we know that it means to stop praying. Has anybody here ever done that? You don't have to raise your hand. I imagine that many of us have gone through a period in our lives at which you stopped praying.
Stop praying, you've been involved in eating and drinking and marrying and giving.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's very consistent with the context here when you notice that. To give up, at the very least, means to stop praying. What are you essentially doing when you give up and stop praying? Severing your connection with God? Yes. You're giving up on your plans for a future eternal kingdom with God. He's not going to come. It's not going to happen. Or if he does come, I don't want to be a part of it. And, you know, that affects everything in your life, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It affects how you spend your money. Where you put your investments. Who you spend time with. If you're not planning on an eternal future, that changes a lot of things.
It says, he who endures to the end mm-hmm. will be saved. And if you quit,
yeah,
you forfeit.
A few stories back, or a few months back, we talked about the tower builder and how it's better to count the cost before you begin. If you're going to get 3/4 of the way down the road and quit, now you've got a bunch of concrete taking up space in your yard and it's not doing any good. It would be better not to have begun than to have started and not finished. Very interesting. One of the comparisons that came to mind for me was the Millerites. The Seventh-day Adventist Church began as an outgrowth of a movement called the Millerite movement. A preacher by the name of William Miller, who through his studies of the prophet Daniel, largely Daniel and Revelation, believed that the second coming was going to happen around the year 1844. And it was the biggest grassroots religious awakening in American history. Right? 100,000, some estimates say, 200,000 or 300,000, some estimates say, people became sort of adherents of this movement. It was an interdenominational movement, although William Miller himself was a Baptist. And at the time that all that was going on, there were people who believed that Jesus would be coming in just a few weeks. In other words, they had a clear enough idea of when this event would take place that they thought, you know, on this date it would happen. And there was a preacher who, you know, it was a great revival. People were being baptized. People were coming to the Lord all during this time. And in the last few weeks leading up to that date, he got out in the cold water of a lake or stream to baptize a bunch of people. And people told him, you're going to get sick, you're going to get pneumonia, you'll die, whatever. And he essentially said, it doesn't matter. People's spiritual life is more important. And he stayed out for, you know, half an hour or whatever time it was. And sure enough, he did get sick. And he did get pneumonia. And he did die. And he told his family, you know, his wife and children, it's okay. It'll just be a few more days and we'll be reunited. And they were greatly disappointed. Yes. But I think of the disciples and all those who thought that Jesus was the Messiah and He was going to make things right. Do you understand the emotional content of that? That in just a few more days, we'll have justice against our adversaries. And even when He was resurrected, you know, and they found out, okay, He's not dead, He was still taken from them. Things didn't turn, you know, He wasn't resurrected and then became the Messiah and set up the kingdom and everything the way they had hoped. And so they still had all this adjusting to do. They had to decide they were going to keep on praying and not lose heart. Not just say, well, you know, there were fine promises, but I don't think God's ever really going to send the Messiah. It's just not going to happen. I might as well, whatever it is, give up. I might as well go into business. I might as well, because this life is all there is. I watched this last week on PBS, part of I think I saw the whole thing, a special about, this was a really weird story. A Japanese family whose 13-year-old girl was abducted by, not aliens, North Korean spies. They lived on the coast of Japan that's across the sea from North Korea. And apparently, you know, with no diplomatic relations with most of the outside world, the North Koreans, if they wanted to learn Japanese, couldn't just send somebody over to Japan to go to school and learn it. Right? I mean, there were travel restrictions. So they had in mind that they could be more effective, some of their spies could be more effective if they could use a Japanese passport and speak Japanese. And, you know, because they can't just travel around the world because they're from North Korea. Only problem is they couldn't just send somebody to Japan to learn Japanese. So the way they solved the problem was they began abducting Japanese citizens and taking them back to North Korea to use them to teach their potential spies Japanese and culture and mannerisms so that they could impersonate Japanese citizens in their work around the world. And most of the, you know, I mean, when this began happening, nobody knew what was going on. It was just, you know, a young couple disappeared from the beach on their, you know, on a date, and their car was left abandoned, and, you know, there was no trace of them. But it happened along the coast, you know, across from North Korea. And eventually there were rumors that were heard from people who had high-up contacts with the North Koreans that this was going on. And eventually there was a former North Korean spy who defected to Japan and told the whole story. Well, this family had a 13-year-old daughter who just didn't come home from school one day. And you can imagine all the panic. You know, the first assumption is she's been kidnapped and raped and, you know, all those kinds of things. But as the years went by and there was no evidence, finally somebody who knew a little bit about these abductions said maybe she was abducted. And they began pursuing that as a, you know, as a line of inquiry, trying to find out if that was indeed the case. And eventually this North Korean spy who defected said, yes, I know your daughter. And he could tell them the story of the time from when she was taken. It was an accident. The spy who grabbed her didn't realize she was only 13 years old. And he was horrified when he found out. She rubbed her fingernails off on the metal bulkhead of the, you know, cabin that they put her in for the 40-hour sail back to North Korea. And now she was grown, you know, 39 years old or whatever, married and had a daughter there in North Korea. Anyway, just a horrific story. Eventually, the families of these abductees put pressure through nonviolent protests on the Japanese government because the Japanese government was sending free rice to North Korea. You have to understand, the North Korea, you know, the whole infrastructure, the place is falling apart. If you may remember that story about the tower, the parable of the tower, we use that example of this massive hotel that was being built in North Korea, and they had to abandon it because the concrete was such poor quality. The elevator shafts went like this. You know, they couldn't finish it, and it would cost too much to tear it down. Anyway, that's the state of things in North Korea. People are starving, and they rely on food aid from places like Japan, sending, you know, tons and tons of rice over just to feed their people. And so the families of these abductees stood outside the parliament building with megaphones, you know, saying, no more rice, no more rice until they return our children. And finally, the prime minister of Japan took the cause up, and they used it in their negotiations with North Korea and basically said, we won't give you any more rice until you return these abductees. At one point, finally, North Korea officially admitted to abducting 13 people from Japan. But the estimates are that it was well over 100. And of the 13, they claimed that 8 had died. Under all kinds of suspicious circumstances, from suicide to car accidents to, you know, everything under the sun. Very suspicious. And in the case of the spy who defected said, that's absolute baloney. They watched the Japanese, you know, the people that they grabbed so closely, they wouldn't let them commit suicide. They, you know, they watch them like hawks. This is not true. And the reality is eventually 5, because there were 13 they admitted to, 8 they said they were dead, 5 came back home. And when people asked them, is it true? Are the others really dead or are they alive? They said, we can't talk about it because there are others there. And if we say anything, yeah, we can't imagine what will happen to them. So anyway, this is this big, huge story. The father of this 13-year-old and the mother were interviewed through the whole special. And the mother became a Christian through this whole process, you know, searching, crying out for something. She became a Christian, and they were interviewing her and her husband, and she said, well, I never talked to my husband about Christianity because he just gets angry. And he was there, you know, I mean, they're interviewing them both. And he said, if there was a God, he would return Megumi to us. That's the daughter's name. And has not God been accused? Of either not being there, or not bringing justice? Are we not tempted, in the face of the wrongs that we experience on a daily basis on this planet, to say, there's no hope. He's not coming. It'll never get better than this. Jesus knew. That by delaying what the disciples wanted, I mean, they wanted justice. They wanted things to be made right. That he would come under accusation. And the, you know, the big danger is not that we accuse God. What is the big danger? That we give up hope. That we lose heart. That we cease to pray. That we end our relationship with Him. That we give up and make the best of it. So let's talk about the application a little bit. Maybe someone can tell the story. It was very interesting over in Surprise Valley when I asked this question. A couple of people could identify and describe what happened. Has anybody here ever been through a period of time in which you ceased to pray? In which you gave up on your relationship with God and just... I have. How did it happen? Yeah, I mean, Jesus is telling us, don't give up. Whatever you do, keep praying.